March 20th, 2020, we shut down the bakery and went into like lockdown mode. Forbes have published an article about us and they were like struggling to find businesses that had done a quick pivot, but we had. So we got this Forbes attention. Then we got like local paper attention. Before we knew it, we had an email from Penguin Random House saying, we've heard you in an interview. If you look at the market of books, there's loads and loads of vegan cookbooks. There wasn't much out there on vegan sourdough baking. And then Penguin are like, do you want to write a book?
As a young chef, I've been in kitchens since I was 13 years old. So it's like opening a restaurant and writing a cookbook are probably the two. You ask any chef or person involved in food, that's a dream come true, especially from a publisher like Penguin.
Hello and welcome to another mouthwatering episode of the Plant-Based News Podcast, where we bring you the freshest insights from the vegan and plant-based world. I'm your host, Robbie Lockie, and today we're venturing into the delicious realm of vegan baking with a special duo who are redefining the art of bread making. Joining us are Ed and Natasha Tatten, the remarkable couple behind Bread Organic Sourdough, a 100% plant-based cafe and bakery in Whistler, British Columbia. This dynamic duo isn't just baking bread, they're crafting a revolution one loaf at a time. Ed, a vegan chef and artisan bread maker, along with his wife Natasha, have mastered the art of creating natural leavened sourdough loaves, small breads and an array of earth-friendly baked goods. Their sourdough, made with nothing but flour, water and salt, transforms these simple ingredients into something extraordinary. Ed, a vegan chef and artisan bread maker, along with his wife Natasha, have mastered the art of creating naturally leavened sourdough loaves, small breads, and an array of earth-friendly baked goods. Their sourdough is made with nothing but flour, water, and salt, transforming these simple ingredients into something extraordinary. In today's episode, we delve into their journey of creating bread, discuss the techniques and secrets behind their 100 recipes, and explore how they've managed to blend sustainability with deliciousness. Ed and Natasha's story is not just about good food, it's about a passion for plant-based living and the impact we can have on our health, our communities, and the planet. So, whether you're a bread aficionado, a vegan food enthusiast, or curious about the wonders of plant-based baking, this episode is probably for you. So, let's break bread with Ed and Natasha Tatten and discover the magic they bring to the world of vegan baking. As always, if you like this episode, don't forget to comment, like, and share. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It really helps get the message out there. Let's get to the episode. Ed and Natasha, thank you so much for joining us on the PBN Podcast. Great to sit down with you both finally and hear a bit of your story.
Thanks so much. We are big fans of plant-based news, so really stoked to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Robbie.
My name is Ed Tatten, and I am the head baker and COO of Bread with my wife, Natasha Tatten.
We were drawn to Whistler originally to snowboard and have a year out of our professional jobs. But once we got here, we loved the mountain so much we didn't want to leave.
It was definitely very organic starting a business in Whistler. We started slow.
Over time, we evolved into making bread for the community, quite a grassroots operation, and this led to the community asking us to open a bakery. So we did.
I've worked in kitchens for over 20 years, since I was 13, so always had a dream of opening up some sort of restaurant. And as my career progressed and I found sourdough about 12 years ago, I fell in love with the simplicity of it, but also how complex it can be.
I toyed with the idea of opening a vegan cafe, and then Ed was on his own journey making bread, and it came to a point where we were able to team up and bring our two ideas together.
With vegan baking, it can be tricky sometimes, and that's what keeps it interesting for me as a fine dining chef. It was a total sort of switch around. You have to use your brain, and it's a lot of trial and error. So many bakeries use animal products, and our main mission is to change people's perception and let the flavours speak for themselves.
So before we begin, as is traditional on this podcast, I like to find out where our guests started their plant-based and or vegan story, because that's what brought us together. That's what connects us over the work that we do. So who would like to go first and tell a bit about their journey into plant-based and vegan?
I'll let Tash go first because she went vegan first. She's been vegetarian a lot longer than me, and I feel like she inspired me to go vegan.
I mandated it. Yeah, so I actually didn't like meat as a kid and never wanted to eat it. And I have really horrible memories of chewing bits of meat for hours because I had a very old school upbringing where you weren't allowed to get down from the table till you'd finished everything on your plate. And so there would always be the meat and I would just be chewing on it for like 2 hours. So it would be dinner time and then that would be extended because of the chewing that never seemed to end. And then it would be like, okay, now you've got to go to bed. So by the age of about 7, my mother finally gave up with this and kind of accepted the fact that I didn't eat meat. And then once you tell people that you don't eat meat, they start telling you your label. So then I was given the label, oh, you're vegetarian. And it's quite nice in that way, having a label, because then people understand it and you can communicate it. But at the same point, labels come quite loaded and I didn't necessarily know what it meant. So I would say I was vegetarian from the age of 7, but I'm pretty sure I was still eating candy with gelatin and things like that. So I was self-proclaimed vegetarian from the age of 7. Grew up in foster care, so wasn't accommodated for in terms of nutritional needs. So basically was a junk food vegetarian throughout most of my early years. I've sort of worked in like a vegetarian restaurant in Bristol, Cafe Matreya, in 2008. I worked there for a couple of years and that sort of introduced me to vegan food. And we went to VegFest in Bristol around the same time, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And I got my first ever vegan cookbook there. And I remember at this point, though, we were still quite curious or couldn't quite understand veganism. Like, we didn't quite get it. And I remember seeing like a vegan ham hock at this festival. And Ed, being a fine dining chef especially, was like, what the hell is this? Like, why would you make something look like a ham if you don't eat ham? And we just couldn't quite grasp it. And it wasn't until I moved to Canada, this was 2013, and I started working accidentally, kind of, as the first cook at the kids' ski school, cooking crappy food for 800 kids and ski instructors every day. And I started reading labels on food. And then I started going, oh, what is a wiener anyway? And then seeing that I was cooking these horrible hot dogs that were like 40% reconstituted pork. And I started to think, I really don't feel good about feeding little kids this horrible food. And then at the same time, this vegan juice bar opened at the bottom of the mountain. And I would go there every day and like have a green juice and like started learning about like healthy vegan food. And the guys that worked there, they were all really glowing, radiant beings. And they were so lovely. And then the people at ski school were like eating the crappy food, like breakfast, lunch and dinner, because it was ultimately free. And that, and this, on the mountain, all the people got like fat, spotty and depressed. And that's how they felt. And all the people at the bottom at the juice bar were like radiant, glowing, you know, epitomes of perfect health. And then the juice bar people said to me, you know, we're looking for more staff for the summer. When you finish at ski school, why don't you come and work with us? And it was just like, yeah, sure. Like, this is what I want to, follow this path. So then I started working at the juice bar and there were some documentaries that came out. I remember Cowspiracy was one of them.
Let's look at the fundamental problem here.
No one wants to talk about it.
Because they're membership organizations, you know, a lot of them. They're looking to maximize the number of people making contributions.
The leading cause of environmental degradation is...
We need to address that as well.
It's not up to the Department of Water Resources.
Hard to actually target, like, one thing.
I think I watched Earthlings.
Make the connection. Earthlings.
And I just started learning so much, just random YouTube videos and stuff. And I actually went raw vegan. When I clicked with the ethics of it, I said to Ed, right, I'm actually vegan. So I had a new label. I'm vegan now.
How long have you been together by that time?
Oh, a long time.
10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a long time. So we've been, just last year, we celebrated 20 years together.
Yeah.
So
congratulations.
We worked together years and years ago at a bar in Canterbury in Kent. We were both studying. So yeah, we've 20 years, even though we're still so young.
So you should tell Robbie and all the listeners what happened when I said no more animal products in the house.
Yes, Ed.
Yeah.
When was your indoctrination?
The thing is, like, because Tash was vegetarian, we always ate a lot of fruits and vegetables at home. I come from a fine dining chef background, so all the kitchens I've worked in, we make everything from scratch. I've been lucky enough to work in some kitchens where we have gardens – you know, where we actually get like eaten with the seasons. So it wasn't really that much of a shock for me. Like people were like, oh, that's a drastic change. But we weren't the sort of household to eat, you know, meat and fish with every meal, even daily. My background is obviously being a chef. But when I was 5, they found a heart murmur. The doctors did a check when I went to primary school and it came up that I had this heart murmur, and it would be something that would need to be monitored throughout my life, cardiovascular issues. And then eventually they were like, you're going to have a stent fitted in my 20s, which is basically a keyhole surgery, small spring they put up into my aorta that opens the valve. And I just had issues with sort of high blood pressure and things like that. And it always scared me because I had the stent fitted when I was 26 in Bristol. We lived in Bristol in the UK for 5 years. I remember being in the ward and there was a lot of older gentlemen there, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, getting either their second stent fitted because all the cartilage grows around it and you need, you know, one being replaced, or pacemakers. So there are all these different cardiovascular issues, and they were like, why is this 26-year-old in here? Like, they found it pretty strange. But it was something I was born with, something that may have been hereditary. Anyway, fast forward to Tash telling me that she's going vegan, I was like, well, maybe this is my opportunity from a selfish point of view. I knew that cutting dairy out would be great for my cardiovascular issues, and I was like ready to explore, you know, this path. And it took me about a year of eating vegan at home and only eating meat occasionally when we went out, special occasions. But like Natasha said, once, the more you know, the more documentaries you see, it became, I call myself an environmentalist, but I was still eating meat. I called myself an animal lover, but was, you know, eating certain animals that, you know, we say is okay to eat. So it just clicked with me, and I've never thought about going back. Once I sort of committed to the label as it was, that was it.
How did you, I'm interested in learning about your journey to bread, B-R-E-D. You know, what do you call it? Like your vision, your platform, your business, I suppose. But how did you go from being involved in, is it sort of snowboarding? And, you know, I imagine you're in Whistler, aren't you? So like, yeah. How did you go from that to establishing something like bread, which is, you know, they're kind of very different spaces?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like for Natasha and I, we came to Whistler almost for a year out. Like, we've traveled before. We've lived in Australia and New Zealand together. We were both very lucky. Like, I've been a chef all my life. Natasha was an English teacher as a foreign language. So both professions that we were able to travel. And for us, Canada was, you know, 6 months in Whistler. I'm classically French trained. So then we were going to move to Montreal for 6 months. And Whistler just sort of stole our heart, really. We love the outdoors. Like I said, we lived in New Zealand, which we loved, and it had the similar vibe to that. I worked at a farm-to-table restaurant called Outer Bistro, and I was there as a sous chef, and we made everything in-house, but we weren't making the bread. And I had previous bread sourdough experience and sort of said to the head chef, good friend of mine, you know, we shouldn't be buying this in. We could make it organic. We could control how much we need, so we don't have too much or too little. So I started the bread program at the restaurant just for the diners. And on my days off, I was making extra sourdough for friends, but also Natasha and I had got into yoga. And our good friend Tina James had a yoga studio. So I would take, you know, I'd make 2 loaves of bread and I would take her one and trade sort of yoga classes for freshly baked sourdough. So the thing is, I'd taken this freshly baked loaf of bread to the yoga studio, and all the other people there were smelling it. And, you know, this is torture. We're trying to do yoga and all we can smell is this freshly baked bread. So they were like, you know, where can we buy this from? Where can we get this, Ed? Like, this is awesome. You're bringing it for Tina, but we want some too. So it just sparked the idea to start a small business. The restaurant I worked at didn't open for lunch. So approached the owners and said, you know, can I rent the kitchen from you guys? Make the sourdough on Wednesday morning, and on Thursday morning, when there's no customers at the restaurant, our customers could come in and pick up the bread. And it was very organic, very natural. It was all just done through Facebook, all done on trust. So I had a little brown book, would take people's names. Natasha, she wants 2 loaves, put her down, she'd come, pay cash, and then say, can I get another 2 next week? And it just grew from there. I remember the first week being terrified, and it only ever made 10 loaves of bread as a maximum. And I had 30 on order.
Wow.
Made the 30, did that the following week. It quickly went to 50. And within 6 months, I was making 150 loaves on the Wednesday morning and baking them on the Thursday morning. And it was just sort of this underground bread club where I thought it was going to be cool, sort of 20-something-year-old guys, you know, tattoos and beards and stuff like that. But what it actually ended up being was yummy mummies and really nice ladies that would drop their kids off at school and then come and pick up bread. But they loved it, you know, and it was a really nice atmosphere. They'd bump into their friends while they were picking up their bread, and it started to give us that idea of a community business.
Well, no, they were demanding it. And they were like, because Ed was doing by this point like 150 loaves every Thursday. There were some people that couldn't get on the list because he was maxed out of production. The community were literally standing there going, this is ridiculous. You need to open your own bread shop. Like, you can't wait just once a week. I couldn't get any bread this week. Like, when are you going to open your own bakery? And then that's when we were like, oh, okay, bakery, yeah. And we were like, I mean, nobody in their right mind would ever consider opening a vegan bakery in a ski resort. But because the bread is so universal, you know, like, it's not, unless you're gluten-free, it's not really like, if anything, bread is sort of encouraged by religions. You know, in Christianity, it's like the holy bread, the bread of the flesh of Christ almost. It's like super holy. So politically speaking, there's no bother with bread. It's just a universal staple food in the Canadian and the British diet. And so people, they come to us for the bread. But what they didn't realize is that everything else that we were going to sell was going to be vegan because we're vegan. So we were like, okay, we're open a bakery. It's going to be vegan, but we're a little bit nervous about that. And so we had to do some research on veganism and plant-based eating and if there were other businesses out there, because now it's quite common to find vegan cafes and bakeries, like at least in big cities. But back in 2017, when we were sort of thinking about the concept, there wasn't that much out there at that point. Like, veganism's really got a lot popular since then.
To be a successful young entrepreneur, you definitely need naivety, because if you really know how much work's involved, how much money's involved, the risks that are really there, maybe you'll never go out and do that crazy thing. I'm Natasha. I'm the co-founder of Bread, Organic Sourdough, with my husband Ed.
I fell in love with making sourdough 12 years ago and have never looked back. It's so simple but so complex. Bread started as an underground bread club, and it was that customer base that asked us to open a bakery. So it's always been about community. We believe that we are truly sustainable, being 100% vegan. It's great for your health, for the environment, and it's a great way to look to the future. Before the pandemic, even though it's a small bakery, it was just a real buzz and a happy place to be.
When COVID hit, it was a crazy time. We were making record-breaking sales every month. We put everything into this business. We sold our house. We took out maximum loans available. There's nothing that can really stop us, and we have to succeed in this business. There is no plan B. It's all about this one.
Being nominated for this award is incredible. It feels amazing.
I feel like dealing with a pandemic in your first year of business and then continuing to operate and then be nominated for an award like this, it's just shown that you just keep going and good things will come.
We had to kind of go vegan by stealth in the beginning, and it was just, we used the word plant-based, 100% plant-based. And we are aware that the word plant-based gets bashed about a bit, and there's stuff with eggs in it that's called plant-based in certain places, and it's not always very trustworthy as a label. But we felt that at the time it was a bit more inclusive, because vegan, I've got a theory about this, Robbie. So vegan begins with the letter V, and a lot of words that begin with the letter V are not very nice, like violent and vicious and virile, and you can go on. And so I just feel like it's unfortunate, because veganism's great, and, you know, we want to be ambassadors of it. We're really proud of it and we want to spread it everywhere. But unfortunately, it doesn't always sound that good, and just people can emphasize it in like, you're vegan, just the way it gets said and what it means to how it divides people. And people see a V or a vegan word on something and they sort of automatically assume, well, I'm not vegan, so that's not for me. It's quite nice when the whole bakery is vegan because you don't have to put that label in front of anything. You walk in the shop and you just see cinnamon bun, cookie, and everything else. You don't have to say vegan carrot cake, vegan this, vegan that, because it's all vegan. So we want to normalize veganism.
There's obviously quite a lot of studies that have shown that exactly what you've suggested. So your feelings around using the word and it putting people off is very true. It's more and less about the semantics of the word. It's more the cultural association. So the media, the mainstream media, has got very good at demonizing vegans and veganism and painting us as extremists and, aggressive and demanding, etc. And so it always holds up like the most extreme versions of people who live the vegan lifestyle. The word vegan itself, it's interesting you mentioned that. I mean, vegetarian, the word, you know, the history of the word vegan, it comes from the word vegetarian. It's the middle and then the ends of the word vegetarian. So the phonetic of words are obviously important. But then there's so much more to the linguistic aspect of these conversations because, you know, there's the history of vegan. And then there's the cultural associations with it, which ebb and flow over time. Like, there's obviously a huge pushback at the moment against the vegan lifestyle because the success of the plant-based and vegan community is you know, you can't deny that it's changing people's views about what the human diet can and potentially should be. But, you know, interesting, you talked about like bread being this kind of spiritual food stuff, and it, you know, bread is something that humans have consumed for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So it's kind of embedded in our culture in a way that you cannot ever change. I myself have been baking a fair bit of bread recently. I recently went gluten-free, much to my sadness, but I've realized that one can still enjoy great bread. And you've obviously got some great gluten-free recipes in your amazing book, which we'll talk about in a bit. But going back to you, Tash, about and the dynamics between the two of you, you're a couple. Many say like working together as a couple is not easy. And then a lot of people say, no, you shouldn't work together because it's not great. But how have you, firstly, there's two parts to this question. Firstly, how do you manage to successfully maintain a good relationship together and build that strong relationship and continue that strong relationship? But at the same time, you know, what skills do you work together with best? Because obviously there's, you know, you both come from very different backgrounds. But let's start with you, Tash. Like, what are your secrets to a good business relationship, but also, you know, working with a partner in a job like this?
Yeah, so there's things you can do. Like, we recently did personality test, and we both came out with the similar traits of high dominance and some compliance, which is typical of leaders in organizations. So we both have apparently leadership qualities. Therefore, you know, like there's that old phrase, too many cooks spoil the broth. But if I feel like if you have your set departments, so Ed is head of the kitchen, he runs the bakery. People say to me, do you make the bread? I'm like, I'm married to the head baker. Like, and it's likewise, we don't let him on the coffee machine either. So we have our separate departments. Now, you know, I can bake. I've baked many things in the past, and Ed can make coffee. He came to barista school with us on a training course years ago. So he's had the training and he knows all about it, but we just keep to our separate departments, and that's how you run a business together. So you don't step on each other's toes. And of course, you have to come together on certain decisions, like, you know, when we do that, that's more working on the business. So if we're making strategic planning decisions, then we're together and we find that we have similar values. You know, we've been together for 20 years and we're both vegan and we're married. So it's like quite easy to agree on strategic decisions together. But when we're working day-to-day operations in the bakery, it's better to have your own zone. Although we are one team at the bakery and we really value helping each other in different departments, we kind of have our own sub-teams. So I have the front of house team, he has the kitchen team, and we kind of take more ownership for directing those sub-teams. So that's what I would recommend, is have it really clear on what your roles are going to be. So there's less crossover. And there'll be some things where Ed will say, it's really up to Tash on this. This is more her department. And I will say, this is more Ed's decision. And we kind of have to give each other that power sometimes, just so that everything runs smoothly.
Amazing. Anything on that from you, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I resisted it for years because Tash was like, oh, maybe we should set up a restaurant together. This was way before Bread. And I was just like, I don't think it's a good idea. My brother and his wife work together and they just, you know, always said it's so consuming of your time. You're always talking about work, which is totally true.
Yeah.
But I think because we have that focus of being a vegan business, that really drives us. That's the driving force to get out of bed. And it's not just a bakery for us. It's a community-based business that's good for the environment and the animals. So I think because we have that passion behind it, that's the driving force. And ultimately, it's for the greater good. It's not just a financial business.
Yeah, having that mission. And that leads me nicely onto the next question, which is really about the vegan ethos. It's nice to have a mission-led business. You're not just running a bakery. You're running a bakery because you're creating food that builds and starts a conversation around the effect our food is having on the planet and the food system itself. So how do you incorporate your vegan principles into your baking operations and offerings that you have to your customers?
For me, it's like just making it as good or better as its counterpart, its animal-based counterpart. So coming from a fine dining chef background, I'm very critical of my own work. So because it's vegan, doesn't mean that it's always going to be good enough. So we have to taste a lot of different products and make sure we're using the right vegan butter for the right use. So I think it's just having those standards to make sure we live up to that.
We're so proud to announce that we are now a B Corp certified business. B Corp covers how you treat your workers, how you care for your community, and causing the least harm possible on the planet. Most people are actually surprised that we're vegan. Over 35,000 cinnamon buns, 20,000 cookies, 13,500 eggs that we've eliminated, and we've planted around 50,000 trees. Oat milk has been shown to produce 80% fewer greenhouse gas emissions than using cow's milk.
Our health benefits are really good. My living is affordable now.
It's all plant-based, it's zero waste, sourcing local and seasonal produce.
It's a small business and it's really nice to be like in this little family.
We donate 1% of our revenue to animal and environmental causes.
If people come and support us, they're supporting the bigger picture that we can make this amazing food and just spread the love.
We have like the signage in the store, on the door, you know, 100% plant-based. And then we have a lot of people come to us saying, is anything vegan? Is anything dairy-free? And we say, yeah. And we've really stepped into it now where we're proud to say, yeah, this is a vegan bakery. We're vegan. And I train the staff to speak in positive ways. So we say things like, we're dairy-free instead of we don't have any dairy. You know, if somebody says, I'll get a skinny latte or something, they're asking essentially for cow's milk. So rather than saying, using negative words like, we don't have any cow's milk.
We don't do that.
That sounds like, you know, we've run out or we forgot to order some. No, we're being intentional. So we're plastic free. We're dairy free. All of our values have to be said in an intentional way and a positive way.
Because that sparks conversation, doesn't it? Rather than the person going, oh, they don't have any dairy, goodbye. Whereas you say, this is dairy free, they go, oh, why is it dairy free? You mean you don't serve dairy? No, we don't serve dairy. Why do you not serve dairy? Well, if you want to find out more, check out, you know, our website or whatever. Yeah.
And then also built into the customer training is not using euphemisms. So people will come in and they might say, oh, you don't have regular milk? Oh, we do have regular milk. Our regular milk is oat milk.
It's just made with plants.
That's what 90% of our customers drink and we put in our baking.
Yeah.
Or normal milk. I say, oh, do you mean cow's milk? And then we're trying to have little interactions that just plant seeds in the nicest way and trying to smile and kind of encourage people. And even as part of my activism, if I see somebody reject the plant-based concept and go to leave, and I know that they ordered a skinny latte, I'll make them an oat milk latte. I'll take it over to them at the door and I say, this is for you. I made this for you because I really want you to try the oat milk. And I tell you what, nobody says no to a free coffee. So they all take it. And then sometimes they've come back and they said, that was really good. I actually want to pay for that.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, I've been to so many events where I'm always listening like a hawk. And I see people at counters ordering coffee at vegan events, I mean. And there'll be people that say, oh, I just want regular milk. And the barista will be like, we don't, unfortunately, stock cow milk. And then and there'll be this altercation. And then the barista, this was an event recently, the Plant-Based World Expo. And the guy was kicking up a real fuss. And then the barista just said, listen, let me make you a coffee. It'll be completely on the house. And if you like it, great. If you don't like it, then someone else will drink it. And he's like, bah, 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 bah. Made the coffee for him. It was an oat milk latte. And I saw him grab it and he kind of went to the side and like looked around rather sheepishly and then took a sip. His eyes kind of like lit up and they went really big and he went, wow, that's really good. I was near him and I said, yeah, it's not so bad, is it? You know, what's your concerns around plant-based milks and things? He's like, oh, I've heard they're not very good for you. And I gave him a bit of, you know, debunking around the nutrition of plant-based milks. And I said, you know, would you order that again? He's like, absolutely. You know, so it's amazing when you break through. And like my next question is really about the community and, you know, the customer. You obviously have going to have your diehard fans, but just tell the listeners a little bit about, I guess, a few anecdotes of the different types of people that you've experienced who've come in there, from people who've been critical or questioning. But then also, yeah, I'd love to hear about your fans as well and the people that love what you do.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We've had support from the community, but also because we're relatively close to Vancouver, and obviously being in a ski town, we have a lot of people, a lot of tourists, and a lot of semi locals that come every weekend and support us. Instagram's really helped with that as well, because, you know, sourdough blew up during the pandemic, so it gave us a really good platform to sort of spread our business basically, and help people with tutorials and things like that. So a lot of the time, I think we have people come in and ask questions about baking or love supporting us and buy the product, because there isn't really anything even in Vancouver that's similar to what we're doing. There's a few. There's Erin Ireland, who has an amazing bakery. She's more focused on sort of cakes and croissants and things. And we're definitely more focused, you know, sourdough bread. We're known for our cinnamon buns. People love the cinnamon buns. So, and also for us, like, everything's open plan. So I love the fact when I started bread at the restaurant, the kitchen there was open plan and people would bring along, you know, their kids just to expose, you know, young people to where their food is made. So you see the kids, you know, in awe, looking at all the bread coming out. They can smell it. It's warm, because again, a lot of the time, you know, bread is baked in the middle of the night. You get it and it's already 6 to 12 hours old. And for me, it's still fresh bread, but when you get a loaf of bread from the oven, it's still warm. People's face, it just gives them joy and they hug it like a baby. And you can tell they're just going to go home. And for us, it's just trying to inspire people to, when they get home, you know, maybe put some avocado on it or some tempeh, or try and, you know, choose the vegan option. Yeah, it's a nice platform for us to sort of give people the choice. And yeah,
I think the customers we serve have changed a bit. So I remember when we first opened the bakery on opening weekend, which was March 22nd, 2019, 1 year before the pandemic. And I remember these three ladies came in and they were farmers from New Zealand. And there was a whole altercation about us not having dairy milk. And they took it really personally, because obviously for them, it's their livelihood. It's everything they believe in is milking cows. And I remember this woman, she literally spat her words at me and she said, you should have dairy. Cows love to be milked. And they had this whole chat about how much cows love to be milked. And of course they do, when their udders totally full and brimming. I mean, of course they're going to want some relief from that. But, you know, there's a whole other side to that as well. And I just remember thinking, I'm not ready for this. Like, is this really what we've come to already? I've just opened the doors. And I just, at that point, I just said, oh, just the walnut and raisin sourdough for you then, is it? Okay, fabulous. And it was just kind of, if you get people that are so angry, then I think the best thing to do is move on. And one of my yoga teachers in the early days talking about veganism said, don't focus on the people that don't want to change. Focus on the ones that do. So I kind of have that philosophy now. I like to have conversations with people and plant seeds, and we've done a lot of that. I'm very happy to say that now we find more people actually come in and they don't always believe everything's vegan. They're looking for it. And they say, so what's vegan? Is this vegan? Is that vegan? I say, yeah, everything. Everything's vegan. Do you want cream cheese frosting with your cinnamon bun? Or is that vegan? Yeah, it is actually, yeah. So I love to see that.
Or they're just really stoked because they followed us for a couple of years and they've come to Whistler on holiday. And you have people that are just standing in the bakery and they're like, I can't believe I'm here because, you know, now we've been open 5 years. They've sort of been following along. Maybe they're into skiing or snowboarding and they're like, perfect. I can actually go to a ski town and they might come and see us like 5 days in a row. Because of the pandemic, it forced us to sort of get to know people's names. We had to do all that sort of like checking of people's names and numbers. So we intentionally now, if we see a person come in a few times, we ask them their name and just makes them feel more welcome because it is a family-run business. And unfortunately, that's dying out, especially in Canada, you know, and I know in the UK, like the high street sort of, you know, smaller companies, unfortunately, are being taken over and pushed out. So I think people just appreciate seeing Tash and I at the bakery every day and they get that sort of familiar environment and we know, you know, their orders and things like that.
Yeah, community is so beautiful. And I was just on your website where you were talking and those who are interested in finding out more what goes on at Whistler, there is a plethora or a cornucopia, one of my favorite words, of food to choose from. There's walnut and fruit, there's sesame seed country bread, poppy seed country bread, pizza dough balls, rye bread, pecan bread. Then there's cinnamon rolls paired with tofu-based cream cheese frosting. That sounds amazing. That's, I'm guessing, what people come far and wide for. Everyone loves a cinnamon roll. So moving on to the actual bread itself, as we said, bread is an incredible history in human culture. And we could probably talk for like 12 hours about the history of bread because there's so much to it. It's affected our cultures and our spiritual practices across many, many communities. And yeah, so my question really is about like one of the core parts of what you guys do, which is sourdough. First of all, Ed, what is sourdough? And where do people begin with something like sourdough if they're used to making bread? Like, what's so magic about sourdough and why sourdough?
So the amazing thing about bread, like you said, we've been eating it for actually more than 15,000 years. So like you said, it just dates back so far to the Egyptians. They found sourdough cultures in the tombs and things like that. And it essentially, mostly it started with flatbreads. We started by eating basic porridge with oats and things like that. And they found if it fermented, increased in size, and then they were able to add heat to that and get some sort of like leavening to it.
What's leavening for those that don't know?
So it's basically like the natural yeast, so it makes it rise.
Okay.
Essentially.
Like levitating.
Levitating, yeah, okay. The bread levitates, got it.
So it's all sort of bacterias and natural, you know, organisms and things like that. They're on our hands and in the flour, in the air. And we've been eating sourdough essentially up until about the last 100 years. And then we had big companies come along, strip out all the good stuff, you know, all the bran, all the whole grain from it, speed it up and make this sort of, you know, really light white bread. We have Wonder Bread in North America. And essentially it will sit in your cupboard for up to, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, not go moldy, be soft. In plastic, it's horrible stuff, no nutritional value at all. So when I came across, you know, making bread, I started with commercial yeast, which is made in a lab and it just speeds up the process. And that interested me. But essentially, once I found sourdough, it's water, flour and salt. So just three ingredients. And you have a starter that's just flour and water. You start with a little paste. There's a guide in the front of our cookbook to get people going.
I got some of your starter, thank you, which I haven't seen yet. But...
Totally.
Oh, yeah, because you came to the book launch event in London.
Yes. But yeah, I'll let you continue. So, sourdough, why did you decide to pick that specifically? Is it just because of the heritage attached to it?
The heritage, exactly. And I've always been into fermentation before sort of finding sourdough. I used to like making kimchi and sauerkraut, and I've made beer with my dad in the past. And so fermentation is just, you know, it's great for our bodies, great for our microbiome. It's a healthy food group that's been sort of given bad press. But if it is made properly and, you know, you don't obviously indulge too much, it's a great addition to our diets. You start with a starter, which is basically water and flour, and you take a portion of that. You feed it every day. For us at the bakery, we feed it every 12 hours. So it's just adding more water, more flour, and it rises. And you take a portion of that and add it to more flour and water and add salt for flavor. And it also controls the fermentation. You shape it, prove it in the fridge overnight. So it's a long, slow process. And then we bake it fresh every morning. And we do, like you said, lots of different types of breads. We do baguettes and flatbreads and loaves.
So with the starter itself, because when I came to your book launch, I got a little glass jar with some hard flakes in it. Yeah, let's start with that. If I didn't have something like that and I wanted to do sourdough, do I have to go and buy a starter? Like, how do I start literally?
Yeah, I mean, you can. Some bakeries sell fresh sourdough starter. You can buy it online, dried. Something that we're looking into currently is what we did for the book launch is basically we air dried our starter. So we were able to bring it on the plane back to the UK and make bread in the UK. So essentially, it's just been air dried. But you can make it yourself just by water. So let's say 100 grams of water, 50 grams of rye flour, and 50 grams of whole wheat flour. So it's the same portion of water to flour, and it's basically like a mini pancake batter. And you're just going to put that on the side and leave it for 24 hours. You start to see some activity, some bubbles, and then essentially you repeat that same process for like 5 days. And each day you'll see more activity, more bacteria growth. And then you just follow, there's plenty of guides. Like I said, there's one in the front of our cookbook. And it just comes from the bacteria from the flour.
Where does the bacteria come from? It sounds...
It's everywhere. It's in the atmosphere. It's in your home. It's on your body. And so that's the interesting thing, that every one sourdough starter will have a slightly different composition of different bacteria and wild yeasts, which is kind of crazy. And that's really the magic of it as well, because it's a living thing. So just like people... You know, we're all unique, and every starter's unique as well.
And then you get to name it as well. So we've got our two sourdough starters, one called Mother Teresa MT, which is our wheat starter. And then we have 100% rye starter, because a lot of people are avoiding wheat, and we love making sort of 100% rye loaves, sort of German, Scandinavian style loaves. And that one's called Stan Rye, after a local skier called Stan Ray. But before we started the podcast today, Robbie, you were saying that you're sort of gluten-free. During the pandemic, when everyone was trying out different sourdoughs, I actually made a gluten-free sourdough starter, which is possible as well. You can use sort of brown rice flour, buckwheat flour. And I found out that Lady Gaga was gluten-free, so I called that sourdough starter Lady Gaga.
I love that. The gluten-free recipe that I have is 20 grams of psyllium husks, whole or rough, lukewarm water, tapioca starch, which tapioca is a bit like a potato, isn't it? Millet flour, sorghum flour, and then sugar, and then it's this instant yeast and stuff. If I wanted to make this recipe healthier, because obviously, as you talked about this yeast, if I go buy that in the supermarket, it's probably that commercial lab-grown or whatever yeast. If I wanted to, what's it called, sourdoughify this recipe, how would I do that?
Yeah, so you could start a starter. It's a little bit more tricky being gluten-free. The more we looked into it, we were finding it difficult to find the ingredients, one from Canada, but also organic. So it's a little bit tricky on that. But brown rice flour is great to feed your starter. I really like buckwheat, but buckwheat you have to be careful. I'd only use sort of maybe 10 or 20% buckwheat flour. And then sorghum's really good. So generally, it's more of a blend of flours, and that each flour brings a different element.
So the yeast versus the sourdough elements, what I'm trying to understand. So instead of using the 6 grams of instant yeast, mm-hmm. I would use a bit of this starter as a replacement.
Exactly. It's definitely more of a process. So if people sort of, you know, busy lives, things get in the way, there's still nothing wrong with using yeast, because like commercial yeast. Because at the end of the day, you still can control what goes in there. You're not sort of adding too much sugar. You're not, for an example, like the regular bread you buy in the supermarket has 25 to 35 ingredients in there. you know, sugars, stabilizers, E-numbers, emulsifiers. Whereas if you're making a product at home, if it's sourdough or not, at least you know what's going on into that bread.
I think with the commercial yeast, though, there can be a difference for people when you're using flour that contains gluten, so primarily wheat and rye as well. They found that through the fermentation process, the gluten is pre-digested by the friendly bacteria, and therefore when it gets to the gut, it doesn't stick to people's intestines as much, and that's what causes people to have reactions in their stomach, and they say, oh, I'm gluten intolerant, I'm gluten sensitive, and they have found that generally if people eat naturally leavened, especially organic sourdough as well, because when we talk about wheat, it is one of the most widely grown crops and therefore has been industrialized to such a scale that we're using very toxic pesticides on crops such as glyphosate, which is commonly known in North America as Roundup and is used very frequently over here, sprayed on wheat and other crops to kill everything but the crop, genetically modified grains. Mm-hmm. So it gets a really bad press. In our bakery, we actually only use organic flour that comes from a mill that has the same values that we do, that doesn't want to support farmers that use glyphosate. And in Europe, it's less common, but becoming more common. I also think that some people may be sensitive and having reactions to the pesticides that are used in flour. So we always promote using organic flour where possible, stone milled as well, because if you use stone to mill flour, then there's less heat and the heat can destroy nutrients. So there's lots of different factors that make a bread good or not. And I feel that the ingredients, it's important to source the best ones you can, especially if you have sensitivities when eating bread. So the fermentation process is good for helping people break down gluten in the digestive system. And if you just use the commercial yeast and you make a bread within a couple hours, yeah, it might look nice, it might taste nice, but you might find that if you have gluten sensitivities, mm-hmm. you'll react to that. Now, if you're using gluten-free flours, then that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in different parts of the world and had sourdough pizzas and things and have noticed, well, a marked reduction in bloating and distension, as the doctors call it, gut distension, which is a fancy way of saying that, yeah, the bloat. I have noticed and felt that as well and wondered, like, if I'm wheat intolerant, then why am I able to eat a sourdough pizza or a piece of sourdough bread and be absolutely fine? But I mustn't forget to mention your amazing book, which you very kindly gave me a copy of, Bread. Yeah, it was. Tell us about the creation of this, because it's a meaty number. It's a big book.
I'm glad you showed the back cover as well, those beautiful mushroom and lentil,
yes,
sausage roll type thing, because they were a labor of love. I'm not a pastry chef per se, so it took a lot of testing to get that puff pastry recipe right.
Yeah, recipes obviously are the core of like books, and yeah, I think I find it a fascinating process. I worked for Jamie Oliver for many years, and I was involved in the food team, not production of food, but marketing and digital, and I was the lead digital designer for many years. So I got to see the magic of the food team and recipe developments. But yeah, I'd love to hear more about the book and how it came to life, because it's a magical world of recipes.
Totally. Well, I let Tash tell the first part of the story, because she received the email about the book.
Yeah, so I think it's a funny chain of events. So we opened the bakery in 2019, and then a week before our first birthday, we were told by the government to shut down operations and go into this like COVID lockdown. And for us, it was like we'd had record-breaking sales month after month. We were on a roll. We were so focused on, you know, keeping going that we were like, there's no way we're just going to stop making bread. I remember on the last day, the community looked at us and they said, are we still going to be able to get bread? And I said, yeah, we're going to find a way. Stay in touch with us online. Follow us on Instagram. We'll let you know what's going on. And so we pivoted to an online store within 24 hours. We were still selling bread once a week throughout the lockdown. Just Ed and I, we let go of all our staff. And then we started getting media attention for this. So we got mentioned in Forbes. So just to set the scene, so March 20th, 2020, we shut down the bakery and went into like lockdown mode. Staff were laid off and a lot of them went back to their countries. March 29th, Forbes have published an article about us and they were like struggling to find businesses that had done a quick pivot, but we had. So we got this Forbes attention, then we got like local paper attention, and then we got noticed by Small Business BC, which is like an organization over here. They wanted to give us an award. So we got this award, Business Award 2021, and got put on like loads of podcasts and more media attention. Before we knew it, we had an email from Penguin Random House saying, we've heard you in an interview. We've been following you for a while. We love what you're doing. Sourdough got super trendy during the pandemic. Veganism has been trending for a few years. So if you look at the market of books, there's loads and loads of vegan cookbooks. There's quite a few bread books and baking books. There wasn't much out there around 2021 on vegan sourdough baking, a kind of bridge of that encompassed all of that. We'd noticed this because we did sell bread baking books in the bakery, and customers would say to us, are all the recipes in there vegan? And we'd have to say, no, like a lot of them are because they're bread, but there are some non-vegan recipes. So we knew that there wasn't a sourdough vegan book. So we thought, yeah, like what an opportunity to fill that void and be the vegan sourdough bakers. Because there's a whole community of bakers around the world that bake really good sourdough. And then we're all sort of connected on Instagram and, you know, very supportive of each other's breads and whatnot. But we knew that none of them really doing anything vegan apart from the bread. When we got that email, we'd reopened the shop, but we had very few staff or skilled staff because we'd lost them all during the pandemic. And Ed was working from 4 a.m. to 7 p.m. doing like two people shifts. And then Penguin are like, do you want to write a book? I remember thinking, are you crazy? Like, we don't have any time for this. And I'm like, oh God, I can't tell Ed because like he'll like lose his mind if I tell him he's got to write a cookbook right now. So I kind of like had to wait for my moment. He was like in a good mood on a day off. And, oh, do you know, we got this email from Penguin. And then he took up the challenge and was like, yeah, we
yeah, it was one of those opportunities. I was like, you know, as a young chef, I've been in kitchens since I was 13 years old. So I was like, opening a restaurant and writing a cookbook are probably the two you ask any chef or, you know, person involved in food. That's a dream come true, and especially from a publisher like Penguin. You know, they're huge. I grew up reading kids' books and things like that with Puffin. So they sort of gave us a year, 100 recipes, which I was like, that's quite intense. You know, like 52 weeks a year. That's two recipes a week to write, research, you know, shoot, everything like that. So, and we wanted to shoot, I knew from the beginning, I wanted to shoot it all at the bakery with as much natural light as possible and just about the food, not too many props. So it was a challenge, but it was really fun challenge and really pushed my creativity, which sometimes is quite hard because, you know, you tell an artist to sit down and paint a picture. If they're not in the mood, it's quite difficult to sort of create something that you're always happy with. But actually it went the other way. It sort of, it was forced creativity, and I just had to embrace it because I knew I had this schedule of when it had to be done. So you just make it work. You're working all the hours, but, you know, you can always find time.
I think you mentioned earlier about this, people who might be busy and have got hectic lives, but actually, you know, the last few weekends where I've, so I'm proper middle age here now with my kefir over here and my bread over there, and I'm like, I'm doing all these things, but I'm really realizing that this, the process of doing this, that actually being there in the kitchen and actually slowing down is exactly what I need. You know, we live in this like fast paced world where there's so much going on and everything is instant, you know, instant products on Amazon, instant relationships on Tinder. Social media has just created this, social media really that's caused most of this, I think, this culture of like, you know, it's a very dismissive culture, but at the same time, impatient culture as well. And baking and making bread, especially, I think really fosters a culture of slow food, of slowing down and being patient, and that actually not everything is about instant gratification. And I think your recipes and, you know, the philosophy and culture that you are keeping alive, frankly, please keep going, is really important in the world that we live in today, which is obviously being overwhelmed by technology and AI and all of these things, which are amazing. Of course, we wouldn't be able to do all of this. We wouldn't be able to speak to each other if it wasn't for these tools. But at the same time, I think we need to keep our feet on the ground and remember our heritage when it comes to food, because industrializing everything isn't necessarily a good thing. Obviously, industrialization of food has meant that more people have access to food and can survive. But at the same time, you know, I think bringing back these artisanal skills into people's homes and inspiring people to make their own food, if they have the time, of course, not everyone has the luxury of that. But I personally recommend it. So if you do have some spare time on a Sunday, rather than sitting in front of Netflix, why don't you get a copy of the bread book and start trying to make your own bread or biscuits or cakes or anything? Because yeah, the only downside of all of this, though, is it's all so delicious. You want to eat it all at the same time.
Yeah, totally.
Fresh is best. That's our motto. Yeah, don't feel guilty about that.
Yeah, that was the fun thing, actually, because there are, I think there's about 10 chapters. So it's not, I don't want people listening just to be like, oh, I'm not into sourdough. You know, there's a gluten-free chapter, there's cakes, muffins, cookies, things to have with bread. So we've got like really nice dips and accompaniments in there.
There's pancakes. A whole zero waste chapter as well. So if you have a sourdough starter and you don't want to commit to making a whole loaf, you can just use your discard to make crumpets, crepes, things like that. We waffles. Have a whole, waffles. And these are quite quick and easy breakfast brunch suggestions. So you don't have to like make the whole loaf and let it prove and all of that. So I always recommend if people get the starter going, start with the discard recipes because they're really tasty.
Can I ask a quick question? Is gluten-free puff pastry possible? A lot of peas there.
Oh, I think
good question.
Yeah, that's a good challenge. I definitely think it's possible.
Right. Everything
it's gluten-free,
is possible.
Vegan puff pastry.
There is a huge, I think, you know, I don't know why, but there is a massive gap in the market here in the UK, at least anyway, for gluten-free baked goods. I know so many people who have intolerances because of wheat. There is obviously a sugar in wheat. And the way I'm going with this is that it's theorized that some people who have intolerances when eating breads and pastas, it might not be the gluten, it might be the sugars. Yeah. In the wheat that irritate the gut lining, it's the same way the sugars in milk, so the lactose, which is a sugar, irritate people's gut lining. So the issue might not always be with the gluten, a lot of G's, gluten itself. But it's fascinating. Like nutritional science is, you know, is fascinating. It's a world I've been involved in and around for, 12 years now. And it's there's so much to learn. And like food and nutrition is just such a vast subject.
Yeah, totally. I mean, talking about sugar just really quickly, like a lot of people don't realize, you know, sugar can not be vegan as well. You know, we sort of make sure we use, because they put bone char into it. So icing sugar, powdered sugars, things like that. If you're not careful, you know, you have to always do a bit of research and make sure you're going for the vegan option.
It depends on the country. Like apparently in Australia, all of the sugar is vegan. But in North America, you have to check because they use bone char in the processing of it to make it white. But just going back to gluten, it's also helpful if people avoid white flour because the bran has been sifted out and the bran contains a lot of the nutrients. And when you sort of sift it out, you get the bran separated from the endosperm, and the endosperm is where all of the gluten is. And so it's very concentrated in gluten and low in nutrition. And actually in the UK and in Canada, the law states that anyone that makes sifted white flour must add in synthetic vitamins. So it's kind of crazy that we take out the nutrients and then we put them back in another way. But these nutrients are also considered to have potentially negative effects. Like we take out folate and replace it with folic acid. So these types of things are considered maybe harmful for like pregnant women, for example. So it's such a loaded subject, but we feel that whole grains, organic, naturally leavened, fermented, stone milled, these are the best ways to consume bread, following those things.
Amazing. Well, you heard it here. Go and get your organic bread. I'm going to, right after this podcast, go and tell my partner to stop buying the bread he buys from the supermarket and only buy organic. Yeah, it's definitely worth spending that little bit more, or make your own if you do have the time.
Yeah, totally. I feel like if you source out, like, if you haven't got the time to make your own, like, support your local bakery, go down, ask them what they use, ask questions, and see, you know, hopefully you can support them.
We do have a local bakery here called the Blackbird Bakery, but they don't do any gluten-free stuff, which I find very strange. I think they're missing a big trick by not doing that.
We have tons of people come in for gluten-free things, even though our logo has wheat in it. And you can see all the flour stacked up.
We do have a loaf. We have a mountain loaf, which is like gluten-free oats and nuts.
Yeah,
and
I saw that in the book. Yeah. It's in the book, isn't it?
Have sort of like chocolate blondies. So we definitely don't have a huge amount, but we always make sure there's options.
The gluten-free breads, just sticking on that for a sec, it tend to be quite dense and heavy, most of the ones I've ever had. But this one that I had, this gluten-free white bread using psyllium husks and yeast and stuff like that, is very light and fluffy, and what's happening there? Like, why is that? You know, if you can look at you can just see the sort of like crumb of it there. It doesn't look healthy, but it's got all like sorghum and millet and tapioca and stuff like that. It seems a healthier option, but the actual crumb itself, like, why is that lighter and fluffier?
I guess because you're making it so fresh as well. You're making it at home, whereas maybe the ones you buy in the store, they have to put in more sugars and more stabilizers potentially, so it's shelf stable. So I think anything that you can make yourself at home is going to be the freshest possible. You're avoiding packaging as well, which is always great. It looks like it's like high in, you know, a lighter flour. And also the yeast is just going to aerate it nicely as well. And the sugars, a little bit of sugar helps activate that yeast as well and get it more fluffy.
I'm going to keep experimenting. A few more questions before I let you go. So what's in the future for you guys? What's going to happen? What's on the horizon? What's your five-year plan?
Well, right now, for this moment, we're focusing on distributing sourdough starter far and wide.
Amazing.
Through e-commerce platforms. So we're developing the packaging for this at the moment, which is quite a struggle because we're very like into sustainability and we hate plastic. And a lot of the compostable packaging is actually not suitable for transporting dry foods, especially if you have to send it to a fulfillment center where you don't know how long they're going to store it in the warehouse for before they distribute it to their customers. So we're just trying to get our heads around the best packaging for this at the moment. That's our project right now, designing that and then getting that out to the masses, because we're getting so much interest since we had the book of people all over the world saying, can I get your sourdough starter? So that's our...
So like you had it, Robbie, it would just be a dried product that people... So instead of it being like, I have to make the sourdough starter and you have to feed it for 2 weeks before you can make bread, it'll be our sourdough starter from the bakery, air dried, and you'll be able to make bread within 2 or 3 days.
That's the project right now. And then long term, we're starting to envisage maybe a bigger concept. We'll just say that, a bigger concept.
No clues.
And it's very early days. It's very Fair early enough. Days at the moment. So we're starting to look at different spaces and see what's out there. Maybe relocating to a big city where we can have a bigger impact, a bigger reach. So far, we've been a pretty small business, but we really believe in having a big impact. We are a B Corp company, so we donate 1% of our revenue to environmental and animal causes. The bigger the reach, the more people we serve, then the more money we can donate, the more good things we can do as a business.
Amazing. That's wonderful to hear. Before I let you both go, I always like to ask my guests this final question. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you know what's coming. If you were stuck on a desert island and it was just you and a pig, fortunately, there's two of you, so you've got a few more resources. But if it's you, both of you and your pig friend, you're not going to eat the pig, obviously, because you're both vegan. But if I could leave you both with one vegan dish, one music artist, and one book, what would you take with you?
Vegan dish. Probably it would be tofu scramble. I think that's our go-to, isn't it?
We do eat it a lot. Mine would be different.
Okay. but then I'm also toying up like a chocolate miso babka instead of a tofu scramble. Like,
wow.
That would give me a lot of satisfaction. Not as many nutrients, not as much, you know, but good stuff, but it would definitely taste good. So one music artist, I'm a big old Blur fan. And they've had a lot of different albums, so maybe I'd go for Blur. So many It's so tricky just to choose one book, Robbie. Maybe I would go for Autobiography of a Yogi.
Okay.
There's a lot that happens in that book. I need to read it again as well.
Sounds great. Who was the author?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure who the author is, but I know that John Lennon was a massive fan of this book. Was it John Lennon? One of the Beatles, Ringo Starr or George, I can't remember which one it was, but I know one of them like bought like hundreds of copies and would just give one to everyone they knew. And they were like a big promoter of the book.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Paramahansa Yogananda.
Thank you.
That's right.
Amazing. And you, Ed?
Probably have to go tacos. I love Mexican food.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, tacos are so versatile, so you can change them up a little bit. I love the textures of them. And then I'm massive into hip hop. So recent, amazing. Like the last few years, like Little Sims. I love Little Sims.
Higher, yeah, we are. Higher. Say what? Sounds so special beside the world we live in. It's so rare to find it. Go keep that. Yeah, it's about time. We got the just news for the world. We put in over a decade in this bitch, you know. Yeah, man. Woo! Say he never called another woman me or more. So I opened up the way and now he adore. Did it on a wave, I don't play, get you seasick. Charged up, fully barred up, I'm unleashed in.
Or Loyal Kana, like, big fan of those
I was
two.
Not expecting that, a baker who's into hip-hop. I love it, here for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm into old school, like I could say, like, Dre or Snoop Dogg or Ice Cube.
Jack be nimble and Jack be quick if you wanna jack me on a lick. Cause I'm that fool from South Central. You think you stuck yourself with a number two pin, so that's how I broke hot lead in your with more bounce to the ounce and a dash. Mash up Van Ness, headed for the west. Everything is great. Slow down for the depth on 108. Keep mashing. Don't drink and dry to keep the fall from crashing. Stash in the clock, and I thought you knew it. You know how we do it.
Yeah, that whole genre is but. I focus more on British hip hop generally. I can relate to it more.
If you check out our Instagram, Ed's_bread, you'll notice most of our baking tutorial videos are accompanied by hip hop.
Oh, wow. I'll look out for that.
They go well, surprisingly. Yeah. And then book wise, I'm not sure. It always sticks with me, Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain, like, which isn't vegan at all. But it's kind of just
controversial.
It takes me back to like early days of like, it's more the kitchen environment and sort of like working in a team sort of thing. So
amazing. Ed and Tatton, thank you so much for joining us on the PBN podcast. I could probably have talked to you both for another hour or so, but it was a real pleasure to hear a little slice of your piece of heaven and your story as well. I absolutely loved it.
Thanks, Robbie. Yeah, as I said, we're massive fans of plant-based news. Like, your channel is crazy. Like, you always have anything going on in veganism, it's on plant-based news. Like, it's the go-to resource. So incredible what you've done, and thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to the Plant-Based News podcast. Our team also includes
Phil Marriott,
Polly Foreman,
Daryl Savchuk,
Triska Taylor.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. We'll be back next time with more food, fashion, veganism, animals, and everything in between.